Bhagavad Gita as it is, 11th chapter, entitled The Universal Form, text number 12.
Divi Surya Sahasrasya Bhavit Yuga Padutita Yadi Basadrisi Sasya Vasastasya Mahatmanaha.
Translation: if hundreds of thousands of suns were to rise at once into the sky, their radiance might resemble the effulgence of the Supreme Person in that universal form. Purport: what Arjuna saw was indescribable, yet Sanjaya is trying to give a mental picture of that great revelation to Dhritarashtra. Neither Sanjaya nor Dhritarashtra was present, but Sanjaya, by the grace of Vyas, could see whatever happened. Thus, he now compares the situation, as far as it can be understood, to an imaginable phenomenon. That is to say, thousands of suns. The energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is unlimited. Even here, we find ourselves in nature surrounded by forces that are so much greater than we are that it is almost inconceivable to appreciate their powers. If we see the power of the ocean, if we see the power of the sun, if we see the power of planets within the universe, or if we see the power of time, if we see various manifestations of power, they by far exceed our abilities and even our imagination. Then here we find a description of the universal form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which was seen by Arjuna upon his special request. And it is described that it can only be described as an imaginable phenomenon. Thousands of suns. So, in other words, the opulence of the Supreme Lord by far exceeds anything that is manifested in this material world. And then Bhagavad Gita says, Ekam Senistitu Jagat, that whatever opulences are here, I'm only manifesting a spark of my splendor here in the material realm. Therefore, if we compare the living being to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then we are, there is no question of comparison. Still, that same Supreme Lord, who was now manifesting his universal form to Arjuna, had previously been present in a human form, and he had been very close to Arjuna. Now that Arjuna was experiencing this universal form, this form of the greatness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he was not able to relate very much to this huge form, which was both giving all benedictions and both destroying everything in this world. He could not get very close and intimate to this form. So the Supreme Lord is simultaneously unlimitedly great, and he is also at the same time available on our level. He is also manifesting himself to us, directly relating to us as we are here in our human existence. Because ultimately, the Supreme Lord, in his eternal form, is not displaying his great majesty, his great opulences, his unlimited energies, and so on. The Supreme Lord himself is manifesting himself in a personal form, where he is intimately connected with his devotees. This is the understanding of Bhagavad Gita, that the personal form of the Lord is more important than his energies. He has so many energies, but ultimately the personality of the Supreme Lord is more important than his energies. But we are so impressed by his energies, because from our perspective they are so great, that sometimes we can, in our mind, not go beyond it, and that it is difficult to accept the personality of Godhead. But that is the person that we are discussing this evening, because that is the person who spoke the Bhagavad Gita. And he says, avyaktim vyaktim apanan manyante mama buriya, that only the less intelligent persons will think that the personal form is of secondary importance to the impersonal energy. That some will think that this impersonal feature of the Lord is the origin, and that whatever personal manifestations are there, that they are temporary. But this is not a fact. Bhagavad Gita denies that point. Natrivaham jatudasam natam nime janani pa natrivaham nabhavishyama sarviviyam mataparam. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you. So this is the point, that Krishna exists eternally in his personal form, Govindam Adipurusham. And therefore, we are interested in the eternal form of the Lord. The form that Arjuna saw, the universal form, is actually not an eternal form. That universal form is manifest for some period of time and then no longer. But the form of Krishna is the eternal form. Therefore, the form of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is much more important. And he is the source of all sources. Govindam Adipurusham. He is the Adipurusha, the original cause of everything, sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes. So understanding the position of Krishna, we understand that Krishna is a person, but he is not like any other person, because he's an unlimited person. His abilities are unlimited. His qualities are unlimited. And therefore, he's a person like no other person exists, because any other person is limited, very limited, limited in intelligence. I met someone in New York who said he was God. I said, okay. And there were so many trees. I said, well, Mr. God, you know, could you make any of these trees disappear? If you could you do that? He says, you know, what has that got to do with it? I said, well, you know, if you cannot do such a thing, then how you are God? Yeah. How you are God? If you are God, but you are limited by all the laws of material nature, then material nature is more powerful than you. So God must be the master of material nature. That is your definition, he says. I said, all right, then what is your definition? A God that does not have, that is not more powerful than material nature. And he was quite old, you know, and like, maybe, clearly a hippie who had turned 60. Yeah? So, I said, well, what is your definition of God? You know, that he's not more powerful than material nature? That he's old and weak, right? And vulnerable, and yet he is God? Is that your definition of God? He says, that makes a pretty poor God. Yeah. Then he didn't want to talk to me anymore. What can we say? Krishna, at all times, Krishna always remained fully powerful. Krishna appeared in this world 5,000 years ago. Krishna performed pastimes as a child. But even when Krishna was a child, he was unlimitedly powerful as a child. It was not that Krishna only became powerful later through some process, that he performed great austerity and then one day realized that he was God. No, Krishna always was. Every moment of his appearance he was. So this is the difference between Krishna and so many other personalities who have claimed that they were God. Yeah. Who have claimed that they were God. They began to perform certain austerities, or they received certain blessings from another great personalities, and then through some process they realized it, that they were God. But Krishna did not need to do anything for it. Krishna always was. That is the nature of the Supreme Lord. There is no requirement for him to become God. One is always God. Therefore, one should understand very clearly that the tiny living being, may exist, may enter into many bodies. Vidya Vinaya Sampani Brahmani Gavani Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakicha Pandita Samadarsinaha. The wise person sees with equal vision. A brahmana, a dog eater, an elephant, a cow. He sees all these different creatures as equal. Right? Not that man is the same as a dog, but he sees that within each of these living beings, the same spirit soul is present. So the soul may be present in so many different forms of existence. The soul may be present within a tree. The soul may be present within the animal. The soul may be present within the human being. And in fact, it's the same soul who just goes on a journey through different bodies, and so on. So the soul can be manifest in very insignificant identities, such as an insect. Or the soul can also be manifest in very powerful identities, such as even being superior to human beings, such as the devas. But the soul can never become the Supreme Lord. It is not that there is some process that we follow through which we can realize that we are God. Right? It is not possible. God always is the Supreme. He never for a moment becomes covered by the material energy. The material energy cannot cover him. This is to be understood. Krishna is always under the divine energy. He is the origin of the divine energy, Daivi Prakriti. He is the source of that, of the divine energy. Daivi yesa kunamayi mama maya durachaya. And the devotee, he is also under the influence of the divine energy. Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritam asuta. The pure devotee of the Lord, he also takes shelter of the divine energy of the Lord. So, it's not fashionable in this day and age to be a devotee. It's just not something that is done. Spiritual life is also obscured by so many other things that are presented as spiritual, that one thinks, well, what does God have to do with spirituality. But God has everything to do with spirituality because spirit, we living beings, we are spirit in our true self. We are spirit. And the Supreme Lord, He is the ultimate spirit. He is the refuge, the shelter of all spirits. It is pointed out that the spirit soul, by nature, is asrita, always shelter seeking. We need some shelter. We need all kinds of shelter. We need shelter for the body. We need shelter for the mind. If we don't get shelter, then how can we exist? We are never independent. We always are relating our existence to something else. There is no question that at any time in our life we are ever independent. It doesn't exist. Always something. Just see how we all have decorated our bodies in so many ways. There's no independence. Everyone is dressed in a different way. And the dress has a multi-purpose. Oh yes, it has to do with temperature. It has to do with covering the sexual parts of our body. It has to do with our image. It has to do with expressing our beliefs. It has to do with so many things. Yes. It has to do with our security. So many, in many aspects, we are taking just shelter of our clothes. And aren't we taking shelter of millions of things? We're taking shelter of our money in the bank. We're taking shelter of our nationality, of our passport. And it is true, there is shelter. If you are Dutch, there is shelter. Because ultimately, when you're Dutch, you can always get money from the government. That's the way. You know, in this country, you can do it. If you're determined, you'll get it. It's just a matter of, you know, being firm and fixed, you know, and just sticking it out, and you'll get it. But not everywhere else. In some countries, you just starve. So a Dutch passport offers a certain amount of security. Here, ultimately, it is some facility, some shelter. So many things that we have, so many attributes that we have that give us shelter. Physical shelter, mental shelter, and so on. And all this kind of shelter can never be avoided. Because never during our life will there be a moment that we can exist without shelter. When we're young without our mother, what is our chance for survival? No chance at all. Shelter is needed. So ultimately, it is Krishna who is our shelter. There is no other shelter. Once we have found shelter in Krishna, then we found a shelter that is foolproof. Because all other shelters fail at times. All other shelters are insufficient. There is nowhere in the world that we can take shelter that it will fully offer us or satisfy all our needs. It does not exist. Therefore, we have to take shelter of many things at the same time. And all of them add a little bit. And then still, we have to accept many things we don't want to. Therefore, in spite of the fact that we take shelter, we're not fully satisfied. Wife takes shelter of the husband, not fully satisfied. Husband takes shelter of the wife, not fully satisfied. And it goes on. whatever shelter we find, not fully satisfied. So only if we take shelter of Krishna can we be fully satisfied, because Krishna is the source of everything. And therefore, he's in control. Maya jakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam etunanena kuntaya jagat viparivartate. Only Krishna is in control. Nobody else is in control. Sometimes we are apparently in control for some time, but nobody can be permanently in control. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead is in control. And ye yatamam prapadyante tam stateva bhajami aham. As we surrender unto Him, He will reward us accordingly. He will reciprocate accordingly. So the more we surrender to Krishna, the more Krishna will ultimately provide us shelter. That is the actual reward. If we say ye yatamam prapadyante, it means shelter. Krishna will give us shelter. And the more Krishna will give us shelter, the more we are actually experiencing the opportunity to express ourselves fully to our fulfillment. Such, nowhere else can we. Everyone is expressing himself some way or other. Some people are trying to catch the attention. Some people are trying to avoid the attention. Some people make a statement. Others try to become invisible. There are different ways that people are expressing themselves. But there is no question that we can ever express ourselves to our satisfaction. Whatever way we try to express ourselves, we'll be frustrated. And even famous celebrities are frustrated. Hollywood is an interesting phenomenon, because Hollywood is the emblem of those who made it completely, as far as you can materially make it, in the sense they had all fame, all wealth, and everything. And Hollywood also is the place where people get caught up in the most perverted, most degraded kinds of enjoyment, or and so on. Just we see that nobody is straight in a place like Hollywood. Everyone is warped, as they say. Everyone is kinky. Everyone is bent. Everyone is screwed up. Everyone needs has some twists. What to do? Why? Because ultimately, no shelter, and one cannot express himself without frustration in this world, no matter how much success one will achieve. So only in the relationship with the Supreme Lord can we fully experience this fulfillment in life. And it's a simple truth, but difficult to implement. There are many who've understood this point, that only in the relationship with the Supreme Lord, in service to Him, that one can experience fulfillment in life. But how can we take to it? It is very rarely achieved, not easy at all. So somehow or other, many people, they come somehow or other to Krishna. Many people show some interest in Krishna. But very few come to the point where they say, yes, I'm going to give my life to Krishna. And then of those who say that they are going to give their life to Krishna, very few are actually really doing it. And of those who are trying to really do it, still there are so many that somehow or other get distracted on the way, that somehow or other, while being on the path, get again caught up in the material energy, some way or other. It's nuts. Although the process is so simple, and although the path is crystal clear, somehow or other, it's also easy to deviate from that path and to again lose spiritual life. Therefore, Krishna sends his extraordinary devotees, because these extraordinary devotees, they can generate so much faith in people that they can create a very great commitment in many people. And this kind of commitment in many people creates a movement. If we speak about the Hare Krishna movement, then we cannot speak about an organization. We cannot say that an organization that was founded in 1966 in New York is the Hare Krishna movement. The true Hare Krishna movement is the movement of commitment that people have in their hearts due to deep faith in Krishna consciousness, the commitment to dedicate themselves to the ideals that Krishna has presented in the Bhagavad Gita, and to dedicate themselves in devotional service to Krishna. That commitment to devotional service makes up this movement. Otherwise, there is no movement. There's no question. And if it was merely an organization, then who would be interested in it? Some, just like the Theosophical Society, you know, some office with some dusty books and some caretaker with a key and some memories of the days of yonder, and maybe a meeting of some scholarly people once a week, or once a month, or once a year, or whatever. Or even once a week in the church, in the temple, in the mosque, right? Once a week. Again, an institutional payment of one's religious debt, right? That's all. Right? A symbolic gesture. Yes, here I am once a week. I'm showing that I'm sincere. Sorry, we don't buy into that. That's not sincere. That's hypocrisy. It's not sincere to profess one's faith in the Supreme Lord once a week. It must be done 24 hours a day. It must be done completely, all the time. One must become a 100% surrendered soul who is convinced. If we are really convinced, only then can we be sincere. How is there sincerity without conviction? If we're not convinced, we can't be sincere. Yeah. We can't be sincere in our dedication to the Lord. You can say, well, we can be a sincere seeker. Yeah, but, you know, that's not good enough. When we're saying real sincerity must express itself in dedication, then one can become truly sincere. And if we are dedicated to the Supreme Lord completely, 100%, that's the sign that we are dedicated. Then we are convinced. Then we are real. Then we are devotees. Otherwise, we are not fully. Otherwise, we may have some devotional tendency, but we are not convinced. And we also maintain other activities. Then, one cannot expect to actually overcome the influence of the material energy, then one will remain controlled by the lower energy, by the material energy. If we are controlled by the material energy, then life has its limitations, because the material energy in itself has two faces. It has the face of pleasure and it has the face of pain. It has the smiling face of pleasure and the cruel face of pain. And there is no saying when which face will look at us. It can change any moment. So if we are under the control of the material energy, then we have to accept these two aspects. Inevitably so. And there's nothing we can do about it. So anyone who is not 100% surrendered to Krishna is, for the percentage that he's not surrendered, under the control of the material energy. And will have to face these two sides of the material energy. Inevitably so. So this is not a mild thing. Therefore it's not like, well, you know, I don't see why I should be so committed to spiritual life. I mean, isn't that a bit too fanatic, a bit too strict, a bit overzealous, right? A bit too much religious fervor? Couldn't it be just something, the golden middle way, yeah, something? Couldn't it be just that? No, because the material energy is no fun, at least not just fun. There's fun and there's also pain. So we can, and in the end, right, fairy tales have a happy end. And what is the happy end of the fairy tale? The happy end of the fairy tale is, and they lived happily ever after. But in real life, nobody lives happily ever after. Everyone dies a miserable death. Or does anybody die a happy death? No. You know, we say happy birthday, but you know, just if someone's dying in the hospital, I shake his hand, congratulate him, say happy death. Right? That's pretty weird, right? Happy death. Miserable death. Right? Death is like pretty gruesome, miserable, horrible, undesirable. So material existence in itself, right, is a strange thing. Sometimes I give a description. Imagine we're going to have a party. It's going to be the party of our life. It's going to be a great, great, great party because it's going to be your dream party. Yes? Everything you've always desired. It will be there. Do not worry. It will be there on the dream party. Will you come? Oh, yes, you will. I'm sure. Will you come to the dream party? Yes, you will. There's only one little catch. It's not so serious. But at the end of the party, everyone will be shot. Shot. Bang. It's all right. It's quick. Everyone will be shot dead. Yeah? Just completely dead. But it's going to be a great party. And really, you know, like, I mean, don't worry about it. It's going to be too good to be true, because everything you've always been dreaming of is going to be there. It's going to be our dream party. So, you know what this dream party is called? This is called life. It is life. Because at the end of life, everyone will be shot, or crushed under a car, or die in a bed, right? But ultimately, there are no survivors. So who wants to be under the control of the material energy? Only a fool. A fool. Therefore they say, this world is fool's paradise. So anyone who says that I have some time for spiritual things, I'm interested in them, and some time for living a normal life, there is no normal life in this world. Who says that there is a normal life in this world? Who says it's normal? Who says it's normal when people are in a hospital, lying on a stretcher, and are being cut open, while many clips are being put upon their organs to control the bleeding? Who says that's normal? That's not normal. That's hell. And shall we make a list of all the other things that are so-called normal?
No.
Actually, Bhagavad Gita will open our blind eyes. This is normal for a blind person. I also thought it was normal. I thought everything was normal, right, that I grew up with. I thought that Holland was the only normal country in the world. That's what I thought. Holland is normal, and I thought every other country is strange. I thought like that for quite some years. Right? But now I know a little different, that actually what is really, it's not so normal to die, because now I realize that if I would have a choice, well, I don't want to. I'd rather not. I'd rather go for the fairy tale, live happily ever after. Can't I have a fairy tale? Yes. No. Well, once our eyes were opened by reading the Bhagavad Gita, we finally began to understand the origin of the fairy tale, where they got it from. Finally, it became clear that where the idea had found its roots. Because there is such an existence where one can live happily ever after. In reality, but not in this world, not here. It's not that a prince is going to meet a princess and they're going to live happily ever after. That doesn't exist. That's a joke. A pretty sour joke. But the fact is that there is a reality where we exist in eternal happiness. And this is what we understand from Bhagavad Gita. And from Bhagavad Gita we learn that that is actually the dimension where the soul belongs. And that